Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Millennial Life, a podcast where I talk to different millennials about their lives and how they are managing young adulthood. I'm your host, Joe Cole. Today on the podcast, I talk to Ryan Aflito, who is from the town that I grew up and currently reside in, Pequannock, New Jersey. Ryan was in the same graduating class as me, so he has only been out of college for a little less than a year now. And since then, he has been working diligently, quite diligently, for a digital marketing startup that he helped create. So I talked to him about that and how he started being involved with that and how the company has evolved since its inception. But before we get into that, I want to talk about something that happened on the last episode of my podcast with Mike Mee that I feel kind of bad and weird about. At the end of the podcast, we were talking about the film industry and how certain actors are hired because they are financially viable rather than being completely right for the part. Then I offered an idea about how movie stars, challenge the experience of being completely immersed in the artistic experience or story that is being conveyed by a movie, because instead of truly believing that I am watching a story be told authentically, in the back of my mind, I still think, oh, that's just Matt Damon, who I've seen several times before, pretending to be an astronaut on Mars. And nothing against Matt Damon. He is a fantastic actor and did a fantastic job pretending to be an astronaut on Mars. But anyway, after I released the episode and listened back to it, I realized that I didn't mention that the quip that I made when I said, oh, really, Seth Rogen's just playing another guy who's now named Jeff, or whatever name I said, meaning Seth Rogen is playing another guy who is pretty much like every other character he's played, but now he just has a different name, and the character is just a part of a different story. Once again, nothing against Seth Rogen. He's a creative hero of mine. But anyway, that was actually something that I heard Bo Burnham say in Pete Holmes' podcast when they were talking about the same topic. Because in my podcast, I usually mention a lot of tidbits or ideas that I have heard other people say in interviews when I think it's relevant to whatever topic I'm talking about with my guest. I do it several times in the conversation you're about to hear with Ryan, and I usually always remember to credit or mention the person when I use something they said when associating it with whatever I'm talking about, and I just forgot to credit Bo Burnham as the person who said that, and I guess I subconsciously regurgitated it without, like I said, remembering to credit him. So the reason I'm saying this, even though it was just a small thing, I didn't want anyone to think that I was purposefully trying to pass the details of someone's ideas off as my own. Because I have had that general thought before about the believability of movie stars, but I guess when I heard Bo talk about the same idea, it reaffirmed it to me. But anyway, I just felt bad, and I wanted to say that that I apologize to Bo Burnham, even though he's not listening to this, or anyone who may have noticed that. Even though probably no one did. And I know that I don't have a big enough audience yet where there is a likelihood of someone noticing that, but in case more people listen to this or these episodes in the future, I just wanted to mention that. But that happens to me a lot, though. And now I have to be more aware of it because I'm now offering my thoughts on a public platform. That is a tongue twister. Like, what was I saying? Oh, the episode where I called people on the phone and I was talking to Charlie Doe about literature, there was a part of the interview that I cut out because Charlie mentioned that he has a lot of books stacked up that he hasn't read but doesn't want to get rid of. And I replied by saying, yeah, you never know when you're going to need those. And I took it out because in Mark Maron's podcast, he always talks about how he has a lot of books and crap in his garage, and that and about how he doesn't want to get rid of it because he may need it someday. Something as little as that made me take that part out because I'm self-conscious of being derivative, Is that crazy? Or does that make sense? Even something that small? I mean, I listen to a lot of interviews because I'm genuinely interested in other people's perspectives, and I want to attribute what I learned from other people I hear things that I learn into my podcast, but I want to use their perspectives to help create my own unique perspective and not just copy what others have said before. But hasn't everyone done that though? Like heard something or heard someone say something about a specific topic, either on TV or in your regular life that you realize you agree with, but never thought of in that way. So from then on, whenever someone brings up that topic, you'll completely copy what you heard from someone else, even though it was not your original opinion. Is that crazy? Do not that many people do that? Am I revealing too much about myself? I did it more when I was younger, and I'm trying now to actively create my own opinion on things, but I don't know, man. Influence is a weird thing. You know, isn't that how people's fundamental political beliefs are initially founded? You know, someone hears someone on Fox News speak in favor of trickle-down economics or about how Ronald Reagan was the perfect president and then decides that they agree with that without taking the time to investigate that trickle-down economics failed and that Ronald Reagan made several mistakes, like how after he initially cut taxes, he then raised them again and took money from Social Security and completely disregarded AIDS. Or someone hears Bernie Sanders talk about free college and free healthcare and decides that they agree with that without investigating whether or not that's viable. And no one can get mad at me for saying that because I called out both sides. And I'm done with politics now after that. Because it divides people. I shouldn't have even said that. But anyway, you hear someone's opinion about something and you decide whether or not you agree with it and take his or her opinions as her own over and over again until you hopefully take in enough information to create your own unique individual opinion. Isn't that how everyone's core belief systems are founded? Not just with politics, but with everything. You learn stuff from other people, you hear people or the media give their opinions and think to yourself, nah, that's stupid, or yeah, I kind of agree with that. And then all of that kind of layers on top of one another until you hopefully have your own unique core beliefs and ideas. I mean, I mentioned this in my conversation with Ryan. I realize that I am only 22 years old and I know nothing compared to most people, and that I have a long way to go until I figure out who I fully am as a person. But that's why I'm doing this podcast and why hopefully it may resonate with some people. And I kind of mentioned this in my interview with Ryan, is that I'm interested in talking to people because I want to learn from them and because I need help. I need help with getting through this time of my life where I'm figuring out who I am, which is what I hear your 20s is all about. So this podcast is why not publicly show me going through this time of self-discovery. So if you're listening and a part of that, thank you. And I wish you the best of luck with your time of self-discovery if you are also going through that. But anyway, here is my conversation with Ryan Aflito. Well, thank you for coming on.
No problem.
I appreciate it.
I'm excited. Yeah, I've always wanted to. You know, I listen to so many podcasts.
Yeah, I literally was just gonna ask you that. What, you're a Tim Ferriss guy, right?
I'm a huge Tim Ferriss junkie. Absolute Tim Ferriss junkie. Like as soon as it comes out, I've also like memorized like what comes out. He releases at different platforms, so he'll release like he'll send an email blast.
Our phone. Doesn't matter.
No, it's all right. Let's
keep going.
Nice background music.
Yeah.
He'll release in different orders. So like he'll send the email first. Mm-hmm. Then it'll send out, you know, then it'll show up on the blog, then iTunes. So like,
oh, wow,
it's a freak show thing, but
you're hardcore dedicated.
Yeah. Rogan too. I like Rogan.
Yeah. What do you like about Ferriss? Cause I'm getting into it. He just seems like a very interested guy. He seems like,
yeah. And you know, he does a really good job of his whole purpose is kind of deconstructing creativity. Yeah. So he does a really good job of digging at important things that don't seem important, but all of a sudden have like a fundamental story behind them.
Yeah.
So it brings out really interesting stories. Like yeah. he did one with Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable, like the details he's going into that, like even Jamie Foxx says he's never shared with anyone else because he's never thought it was important until, you know.
Yeah.
Until now. So it's just, it's bizarre, but I enjoy when he talks with the creatives mm-hmm. because it's always, I find it interesting to find out like at what point was there kind of like break? Like yeah. I always love the stories that depict like, mm-hmm. you know, I was, you know, either living practically in the trash, not making mm-hmm. any money. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I met this person, started doing this thing. And then it starts to connect. Kind of like mm-hmm. the Seth Rogen, the way he talks about his relationship with Judd Apatow. Yeah. It's just, it's such a cool story.
Yeah. That's a big reason I think people are drawn to podcasts and those types of podcasts like his and like Nerdist and WTF with Marc Maron, where they talk to creative people who tell their life stories. Everyone likes a success story. Everyone mm-hmm. likes seeing how a person got to where they are because they're like, okay, maybe I can learn something from this and kind of, you know, copy their life, not in a way to like try to see if I can.
Yeah, like practically pretty much reverse engineer.
Yes.
Figure out what works.
But the thing I think is cool about this podcast that I'm doing, not to toot my own horn, but, and this is something I've said before, format-wise, I'm completely copying Marc Maron pretty much like the monologue in the beginning and then like a continuous interview.
But why deviate from what works?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. There needs to be a using of what has been successful in the past, but there needs to be a creation of something new so that it isn't the same old thing, which I think I'm doing because of what I'm about to say, where his interviews are success story, finding out a person got to be successful where they are. I'm talking to people who may have not achieved ultimate success, young people who are still in the very early stages of their lives, and it's okay, I know what they've been through in the first 20, 25 years of their life. They've explained it. I can hear it now as a listener. Now I can make my own decision based on who they are as a young person as to whether or not I think they'll be able to achieve success for themselves and for others in the future. So that's why I think this is cool because
yeah, and you're definitely accomplishing that just from like a standpoint of, you know, from a fan standpoint, because I do listen.
Yeah.
And you know, me and shout out Matt Graziano.
Yeah.
I was just on the phone with him before. He was like, dude, give me a shout out. I'm like, shout out. But me and him are always talking about how like, you know, you grow up with a close, you know, knit group of friends mm-hmm. and you guys get kind of the same mindset on things, same perspectives. Mm-hmm. And then as you get older through college, there's that tight, really core best friend group that you still stay in touch with.
Mm-hmm.
And you find yourself having these conversations that you don't think anyone else is having. But mm-hmm. then all of a sudden you turn on the podcast and, you know, the relationship that, like, for example, you and Mustafa have, like, mm-hmm. the conversations you have, exact same conversations me and, you know, Matt are having and, you know, me and my other friends. So I think this podcast has shown that, you know, the message is, long story short, that we're all thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, oh shit, there's so many possibilities in this world. Yeah. Like, where the hell do I start?
And that just because we're 22 doesn't mean that we're not thinking about, like, listen, this is a thought I've had recently. I understand that I'm 22 years old and I still haven't come into who my full self is. In your 20s, that's when you find who you truly are. You figure out your full identity. I'm 22 years old. I'm still figuring out who I am as a person.
Yeah.
College is the beginning stages of that. So I understand that maybe for people older than us listening, it's hard to be like, okay, what do these young people know? What do they have to say that's so interesting or so important for me to hear? Yeah. But the reason I think that this show may be worthwhile is because, one, I address that. I'm aware of that. But two, I technically, depending on how much longer I continue to do this show, I'm creating a public display of me trying to find myself. And the reason I'm doing this and talking to other people is because I believe that young people are interested in trying to better themselves. And we do ask the basic questions of, okay, how do I continue to get through this life thing and make it better for myself?
I think it's also certain what this show kind of has compared to like a normal podcast with, for example, adults that are already like accomplished,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not just random people that like, I'm crazy accomplishments yet.
Yeah.
But is that there's a certain sense of vulnerability
yeah.
that you don't really see too much when you're, you know, have two people talking about, you know, why are you successful?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's kind of like the situation here is more so like, okay, what are you seeing? And then we'll compare it to what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And we'll both find like kind of like similarities and find a way to go about this, you know, craziness of of life. But I'm just stoked. I don't know. That's the only way to go about it.
Yeah. And then at least we're trying. We're excited for the 20s, and at least we're trying to better ourselves.
Because it's there's no other better time to be alive.
Mm.
I mean, opportunity wise. Think about kind of, you know, someone that lives in a developing country that has access to a cell phone has more power than the president back in the 1970s. Like, it's absolutely unbelievable. And where technology is going.
It is tricky, but it is a cool time to be alive.
It's such a cool time to be alive. If you want to, you know, start a business, you can start a business. If you want to start a website, start right away. Like, the fact that you can get this podcast and reach it to other people, I think we totally take it for granted, like what we can do.
That was another reason I wanted to do this. What other 22-year-old had the ability to kind of create a snapshot of where they're at in this really early stage of their life and be able to maybe one day look back at it and be like, okay, that's where I was now. Like, I could see that as a 40-year-old that's where I was.
Yeah, you know, I try writing. I've really gotten into this kind of obsessive thought about writing. I find it fascinating, the concept to take something in your mind and, you know, and kind of be remembered for something. You know, I think it's important. And I've been trying to write, you know, daily at least, just to record this crazy time in my life. But now I'm starting to think maybe, you know, just podcasting voice could be way easier. But it just goes to show you that things are changing and forms of content are changing. You know, people are liking audio because of, you know, it's intimate, but also it co-resides with our lifestyles. Everything's on the go now. Everyone's moving. You don't have time. It's not like, you know, back in the day when you had time to sit in the rocker and, you know, go back and forth and read for 6 hours.
That's why I don't understand people say I can't get around to listen to podcasts. The convenience of it. I listen to podcasts when I work out, when I'm in the car.
I feel awkward when I'm not doing something listening to a podcast. I'm just standing there looking at the wall. I'm like, okay, if someone was walking right now and didn't hear me, I'd be just looking at a wall, you know? So,
do you ever feel like you're taking in too much? Like, there's too much information. Do you ever, because there's a thing, Louis C.K. talks about it, where he's like, being a person is just being able to sit with yourself in the quiet and just kind of having your own internal thoughts be the only thing that's present.
Yeah.
And that's what being a person is. And that oftentimes, and he attributes this to young people with cell phones, oftentimes people have too many distractions, whether it's cell phones, television, technology, where they're not taking the time to really internalize and are just kind of, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally understand and feel you on that. I think that's actually an good point, because it's an issue. I think people are scared to be alone with themselves, because when you're alone with yourself, you really listen, and, you know, you get into the depth of kind of like your psyche, and distractions could be alcohol, going out, you know, whatever it is, just something to stimulate your mind. I mean, I've spent a lot of time, like, I don't watch TV anymore. I've been working a lot, you know. I don't really, you know, go out too much. I don't really.
Yeah.
Geez, I sound like a loser on a podcast.
Dude,
but,
no, there's no. I don't drink either. People who listen know this, or I try not to that much. But
yeah, and I mean, I'll drink, like, Saturday's my go-to day. Like, I save it all for Saturday. But besides that, like, it's just constant going after it.
Yeah, dude. A big reason I've wanted to have you on is because there is a bit of. And I think that maybe people don't talk about this that much anymore, but there was a stereotype with people in our generation that were lazy. And I think you were an example of someone who has taken the initiative to try to, you know, start working early and start trying to accomplish something for yourself early. So I want to hear all about this startup that you created, right? What can you first tell me what the company is, or what it is? I really don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And then I would love to know the whole process of how it started and where it's gotten to now.
Okay, so I'll take it from the beginning.
Okay, cool.
Let's go back. So my junior going into senior year of college, I've always had this kind of like entrepreneur. I hate the word entrepreneur. It's because it's such a wannabe type
pompous
of thing.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like everyone wants to be an entrepreneur, like whatever the hell that means. Like,
yeah.
I've always wanted to have money and be a business owner. I've always wanted to control my time.
Mm-hmm.
So in college, you know, I started early. I got a great opportunity to work for Stryker Orthopedics.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to get into the intern program.
What is it?
Stryker Orthopedics is a multi-billion-dollar medical device manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working in trauma and lower extremity mm-hmm. with external fixations, which pretty much it's for severe trauma issues, high compound fracture, bone sticking out of your leg.
Gross stuff.
Yeah, hardcore stuff. They use carbon fiber rings and, you know, telescopic stress to realign your bone. It's stuff I didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
And I kind of floated in because my uncle worked there. And he got me an interview. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone probably thinks I got in there just because he's my uncle, which probably had something to do with it.
Yeah. But,
I mean,
he got you past the first step.
Yeah, screw him. Use what you got, you know?
Yeah.
But it got me in the door, but I ended up staying for a year because they really liked what I did. And I floated in between this like intern marketing associate type position. So it was me and two guys, and pretty much, long story short, it demanded a lot of growing up in a short amount of time.
Right.
A lot of responsibility on me. I was sitting in conversations where I'd have to educate sales rep on how to use our newest product.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I didn't know jack shit about bones.
When was this in your college career?
This was senior year.
Okay.
So this was senior year. And then it got to the point where, you know, I was working, that's a really good on your resume, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I was starting to do the interview process. I was looking at one position in Manhattan for CMF, which is like facial reconstructive surgery, as a sales rep. And then I was at a meetup. At the time, also, there was this class project going on where you know, created a startup, and pretty much I invented a cooler that could fit an 8-foot-long beer pong table within the cooler.
Wow.
So I designed, it was a concept that I thought of, designed it, worked with an engineer. They started working on it that summer. So that was kind
you
of
could
like...
fit a beer pong table in a cooler.
Yeah,
how
so...
How big of a cooler? Like a normal size cooler?
Oh, it was a huge cooler. Well, that's the thing you learn when you start getting into these projects is like, looks cool on paper, but when you sit down with an engineer and... Because it's not just that you have to build it so that it's, you know, it's created now. You have to make sure there's something called tolerance levels. So you have to make sure out of 100 times, 99 of the 100 times that I manufacture, it's going to come out as a viable product and not be damaged.
Right.
So, I mean, creating something like this was practically near
impossible.
Pretty much. Long story short, $10,000 later, you learn that an engineer can't make this possible. So, but I mean, those are lessons and
it's
a risk take. But anyway, so I was doing a lot of meetups at the time because my startup was getting announced and it was a cool class project. And I met this one guy that was 25 years old and started his own marketing firm.
Mm-hmm.
And we hit it off great. He was advising me for a little bit on my cool little startup. I didn't have any money to give him. So like it was just kind of like, we were friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got to the point where he was scaling very quickly, like barely. He was taking on a lot of work.
Scaling and means the business was expanding.
Yeah, he was signing contracts left and right. Mm-hmm. There was business coming in.
What was his thing?
So he started, he actually has a really interesting story too. He didn't go to college.
Oh, wow.
He didn't go to college and he pretty much found a mentor early on and just worked in business development and just did a bunch of jobs doing sales and got up the ladder. And they told him, he was started doing work on the side for consulting. They said, you know, either you're doing your own thing or you're working with us. You can't do both. So then he started his own business in 2014, consulting, mm-hmm. you know, marketing, online marketing specifically. So he said, you know, are you interested? I kind of need a partner or, you know, someone to work with. And you know your chops and, you know, you're young like me. And I think we could make it work. And I had to make a decision at that point. I could take, you know, a comfortable sales rep position in Manhattan, you know, that anyone would die to be in that position, or take this crazy chance on something that wasn't mm-hmm. concrete at all,
mm-hmm.
at all. I knew I off the bat wasn't going to make any money because, you know, practically a startup in itself. And I took that chance because I realized that, I guess it's just ignorant. I don't know. I knew this is what I wanted to do. I've always wanted to start my own business.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I'd get there quicker falling flat on my face and just going after it.
Yeah. I'm interested in the mindset of what your mindset was of trying to make that decision, because something I actually talked about in my most recent podcast was about something that's associated with our generation. I'm reading this book called Millennials Rising, which is like all about our generation.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I've learned from that is there's this yearning for kind of a sense of purpose within our generation. And whatever we end up doing, we want it to be collaborative. We want to work with others, and we don't want to be a part of the past or the present. We want to be a part. We look forward to the future, and we want to be on the cutting edge of the future. We don't want to continue in the path that others have created for us. We want to make a path for ourselves. So I'm wondering if that's something that you resonated with during your decision-making process.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think it's, I don't know, man. It's just a matter of fact, at the end of the day, you know, if I were to get hit by a bus tomorrow, mm-hmm. at least with the decision I made, I know that I spent my last hours creating something that was going to surpass my existence. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like the ultimate kind of thing that's always in my mind, that like, you know, there's so much opportunity in the world that if you, it's corny, but if you think it, you know, you can achieve it. Like you can, if you just have a work ethic and a plan, you can make it possible. And I wanted to see if that was possible. Cause you know, I did the reading, I listened to the podcast, and I heard all the success stories. And I thought to myself, you know, what's the worst that can happen? If I fail at trying this, you know, I'll be in the exact same shitty situation. Because no matter how successful I got in working for someone else, I wasn't gonna be happy. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with millennials. Like, we need purpose. I think a big thing is just simply controlling your own time. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that I can do, if I like woke up today and didn't wanna work, I would. But that's not gonna get you where you wanna go if you don't do that.
Yeah.
You know? So, but I think you're absolutely right about the millennial mindset. It's completely, let me build something that's gonna pay me off in the future and have a purpose, rather than, you know, let me just do this because I'm told to. It's a rebellious type of thing as well.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know?
Yeah. And it's a respect for authority, but at the same time, taking respect for authority in the older generation, but taking what we've learned from them and trying to create something for ourselves, not because we think we're better than all things past, but just because we want to make something for ourselves.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a really good point. I think it is an actual dissatisfaction for how things are. Like when I was working at Stryker Orthopedics, for example, I was doing boring shit. It was really cool. It was fascinating putting together external mm-hmm. fixations and like learning how to do that. But like, you know, marketing promotional material, like not exciting at all. Like I was so dissatisfied. Like I just did not like how marketing was done in general. Mm-hmm. You know, banner ads, commercials. Like I hate commercials. Anything that's trying to sell me, I absolutely hate. Mm-hmm. So like I actually dislike marketing and how it's done. So that kind of inspired the whole, because my marketing firm is all around content marketing. You know, it's trading value for your attention and your permission to market and give you a sale. That's kind of the thesis and premise behind my business. So it's kind of like it evolved from seeing that things can be done differently and better and believing in yourself enough to give it a try.
Mm-hmm. So you got involved while you were still in college?
No. So this was June of 2015, and mm-hmm. I made that decision, and I started in July, and that was, so that was July 2015, so it's been 8 months now.
Yeah. So what has been the trajectory of, like, your time there in terms of, like, from when you started to now in terms of interesting things that have happened?
Oh, my God.
Or, like, how your relationship with the company has grown in a short amount of time?
Yeah, so when it first started, it was kind of, when I hopped on board, it was kind of like, you know, learn by just doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, okay, we, you know, my partner was bringing in clients and I was, you know, working with him to, you know, make it happen. Because at first it was kind of just us, and then, you know, you have a few virtual assistants and whatnot. But mm-hmm. then all of a sudden we started putting these things in place and it was clicking. It was working.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so at first, when I first came on, you know, a few clients, you know, doing pretty well. And then we started having some real success stories, specifically when our arsenal and bag of tricks started changing up. So
what does that mean?
So like, for example, traditionally, the new type of marketing, people can't see me, but I put my hands up and did like that like quotation thing.
Yeah.
So like, it's really the old way of marketing, but it's all around like Google PPC, like, you know, Google advertising, and just like putting a lot of money and just targeting everyone and just pretty much wasting a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the new way is kind of all around, you know, lead generation, specifically with Facebook advertisements, email automation, one of the primary tactics that I've developed with my partner is working with a programmer to pretty much take out virtual assistants and replace them with artificial intelligence.
What is virtual assistants?
So for example, you know, I hire a fleet of guys out in the Philippines to handle a bunch of, you know, mundane tasks that, you know, I know they can handle. If you think about it, kind of what we do is we're like an outsourced marketing department and we're like contractors. So we'll do market research, come up with a strategy and implement that strategy.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what we found was, you know, if you program scripts right, you can track mouse patterns and clicks. So anything that's done autonomously, like, you know, multiple times over and over again the same way, you can replicate and have a computer do. So when we implemented that into certain businesses, I'll give you one example. One of our clients, one of the first clients in that early on stage was National Underclassmen Combine. Mm-hmm. They're the largest high school football combine in the country, over 40 different states. They had like Johnny Football, Marcus Mariota, as some of the guys that came out of the program. So big time program, over 250,000 followers on social media when we stepped on. So that just goes to show you, like, kind of we're very tactical, strategy driven for the situations we come
trying in. Trying to catch big fish.
Yeah, exactly. So we came on and they didn't have an Instagram. They just had a Facebook and it was a bunch of people that were in the camp, you know, 10 years ago and just followed while back. They weren't generating any money online. So what we did was we turned their Instagram into a lead generation. So we said to people, you know, pretty much we're going to put up a few highlights a day of the best kids in the country. Enter your highlight video here to this email and, you know, see if you're going to be featured. So people, all of a sudden, Instagram went viral, you know, not viral, but like over 3 months, we got 40,000 followers, you know, over 1,000 likes per video, over 25 plus comments. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, all right, that's cool. But, you know, where's the money come into play? Where the money comes into play is that every person that submits their email with a highlight is a kid that wants to get recruited. They enter an email funnel where then they get recruiting tips every single week. And then we do flash sales campaign through email. So I'm not paying to advertise them at all. Meanwhile, like a year ago, he was paying $6,000 a month on Google and not generating any money. Now we had completely automated an Instagram to bring him over 300 plus emails per week.
Wow.
You know, so it's just a matter of looking at things and saying, how can I do this differently? Like, do I have to use money? And then when you put certain restrictions and limitations on yourself, you have to come up with other ways to get the job done, which is kind of like the secret sauce behind it. Like, because we were early on restricted by budget, we had to find ways to organically collect leads. So now that we've kind of got those strategies down to perfection, it's just a matter of us going around and pitching that concept. And now it's to the point where we're just...
Yeah, how's that going? Wait.
Extremely grateful for the spot I'm in right now. It's to the point where we're hiring left and right, completely outsourcing everything, you know, that, you know, and managing it well and pretty much just scaling. And also a big key thing that we started doing early on was, you know, you can approach a business and you can do, you know, your song and dance and they're either going to hire you or they're not going to hire you. Mm-hmm. It's a win or loss. What we switched up was you have to compound your interests. So what we started doing was doing joint ventures and finding people that we could, because I mean, I'm 23, my partner's 25. Mm-hmm. You know, we walk into a room of very successful multi-million dollar business owners and tell them that they're doing their marketing wrong. They're going to scratch their head and be like, what the hell do you know?
I'm interested in that. Are a lot of the digital marketing people young people because of their connection to technology? Or is there people who were in the marketing business before social media became more of a prevalent thing who are trying to now utilize that and adapt, even though it may not be that much of a innate part of their kind of understanding of how to do it?
Yeah, kind of a multi-level question and answer.
That was
so you have
long-winded.
Yeah, no, but it's you're getting to the interesting part is that there's like the old school guys, the real old school guys, like, you know, billboards, print, newspaper, that they're set in their ways and they're not going to change. They have a huge network and they really market themselves as executive management type of consultants. Mm-hmm. And then you'll find there's a new type of digital marketer where the marketing agencies, they're the real like social media guys, where they position themselves as, we're gonna, you know, deliver three posts, all these posts a day, we're gonna get you so many followers, and you know, your business is just gonna grow, it's gonna be crazy. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there's no return on that, and they're just posting all day, but they're not making any money. Mm-hmm. They're great at driving traffic, but that's traffic, it's just traffic, it's not converting into dollars. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the new type of marketing, but now it's starting to turn to the old type of marketing, because what's happening is, simply put, these platforms have to monetize. You know, in from 2005 or when I, you know, early 2000s to about like 2010, 2011, these platforms were growing massively and getting all this investment from all these investors that, and it was kind of like, all right, Instagram, we'll give you $1 billion, but we don't know how you're going to make money yet, but just figure out how to make money. Mm-hmm. So all these companies have been receiving so much investment. Now they're forced to make that return for their shareholders. So what's happening is they have to find ways for businesses to make money on their platforms through advertising. So for example, YouTube, huge right now in advertising. Cost per click is like 30 cents compared to Google, which is like $6 sometimes just for a click. So like YouTube.
All right, I'm so dumb. What do you mean by cost per click? So when they click on a...
Yeah, so for example, you see an ad.
Yeah.
On YouTube before your video plays.
Right.
If you click on that, it's technically on YouTube, it's called a cost per view, but in everywhere else it's cost per click. Mm-hmm. So every time you see a Google ad, you click on it, mm-hmm. that's a cost per click. That'll cost you like, could range from $2 to, you know, $50 just right. for a click.
Right.
So all these companies for the longest time, they want to use these platforms, but they just don't know how to do it. So they're just throwing their money at it.
Yeah.
And they're driving a lot of traffic and they're like, oh my God, like I got these crazy click-through percentages, which is awesome, but it's not making you money. So that's kind of like the secret. It's not a secret, it's obvious, but like that's what my firm is really specialized in, and what we focus on is ROI and like pretty much growth
ROI?
Hacking. Return on investment.
Oh, right.
So like pretty much like growth hacking, how are you going to scale and monetize your social media mm-hmm. rather than just exist?
Right.
You know, so it's like a purpose. It's an objective.
Well, man, that's interesting. I saw you got some award. There was some award or some like conference thing you went to, or you placed in something.
Yeah, when I was in college, for this beer pong table cooler thing.
I thought that was for the more recent one.
Oh no, but I mean that was cool in itself. I had to go. I went to Purdue University, and out of like 100 companies, it was like a pitch competition. So it was just, you know, presenting your idea, and out of like 100 companies, which a lot of them were like medical devices and like these crazy like established things that like are saving lives, and I'm walking up there like
with a beer pong in a cooler.
Yeah, I'm like, yo, I got this beer pong that fits in the cooler, isn't that cool? Like, you know. And then I finished like top five.
Yeah, I saw that fifth.
Yeah,
right?
Something like that.
Yeah,
I don't remember, but I mean it was cool just because I mean I guess I presented well.
That's awesome, man.
But yeah, so I mean, yeah, that was really cool.
So I'm interested in what's the future for this company, you think? Like, what do you have plans for short-term future and long-term future?
So currently right now, we're in the process, we just signed a bunch of really awesome mm-hmm. joint ventures. So we signed a joint venture with a production company. I have one client that we kind of like, you know, it's a drone company specific also, which we're kind of like shareholder advisors on. So we're really setting ourselves up with all these big time consultants and, you know, marketing agencies mm-hmm. and, you know, that's compounding. So mm-hmm. the agency itself is scaling. Eventually, really what I'm hoping happens is within the next few months, we're going to be taking on a ton of employees. So I'm going to kind of turn to a real management position, just be focused on sales and, you know, whatnot.
Do you have office or no?
No, see, that's the cool thing. We're purely remote. So I could go travel, you know, the world necessarily and, you know.
Yeah.
Which I totally plan on doing. I'm moving to New York City this summer with my old college roommate. So that's going to be cool.
Right?
No. John Talamo. I'm not sure if you ever met him.
I don't think so. No.
But yeah, I think I've talked to him about it before. He does comedy on the side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we're just going to, you know, try and get famous, I guess. Yeah, I'm just going to film and we'll just market it. And
yeah.
Just get deals at comedy clubs and whatnot.
Dude, I'm interested in any advice you may have of trying to market this thing.
Oh, totally. We could do like a little monetize session right here.
Yeah, sure.
It's a freak show thing, but that's why I love doing it. I just love bullshitting about business. So what you want to do is, what we start off with is we create a consumer persona. So who is your ideal listener? Pretty much based on your viewers already, it's probably exactly who you are. Mm-hmm. Male, 19 to, you can probably get away with like high 20s.
Male and female?
Yeah, but based on, you got to be truthful to yourself with stuff. Based on what is going to be statistically the most, work for you the most. Mm-hmm. And based on who you've had in the past, it's mostly males, but you could probably get away with females too, mm-hmm. if you do the messaging right. So the first part is consumer persona. Who's, your best?
I have a female problem. I need more females on the podcast.
So that's an issue that you want. So what you can do though is, first you identify your consumer, mm-hmm. Their persona, like what do they follow? Who do they like on social media? And then that will start to deliver a certain set of keywords around who they follow. So simply what you do is, what I would do is I take a bunch of clips from and points from your podcast, mm-hmm. and I batch them into categories based on topics and make kind of like a promo reel out of those topics. And then what you could do is you can target on Facebook advertisements. You just do $5 a day, as minimal as that. And you could target whoever, listens to podcasts that are very similar to your podcast. And when they look at the video that's playing, what they'll be seeing and listening is to material of you talking about stuff that their favorite podcasts talk about. So the messaging is extremely relevant. Mm-hmm. They see this podcast in millennial life. They're a millennial. Mm-hmm. They see you talking about something that they're interested about. What would happen? They click on the advertisement. They see your iTunes channel and they'd subscribe. Mm-hmm. Now there's other really interesting things you could do. So what I would do is start creating content. Mm-hmm. Start batching your content and put it into topics. And then just, you can start just playing around, just posting on Instagram, and you can use an application called Crowdfire, and that allows you to follow the most engaged followers on other accounts. So what you could do is use this platform, create an Instagram about your podcast, put up clips or just relevant stuff around what you talk about, mm-hmm. and then follow everyone that follows Joe Rogan. And then the URL in your Instagram, put it to your iTunes.
Yeah.
So it's just about doing things that are crazy relevant to the person you're targeting, and kind of make it impossible for them to not be interested because you provide so much value in their life.
We may have to have more of a legitimate session. Because
dude, I'd love to. I've done a bunch of work with podcasts, any type of content, really, blogs, webinars.
That sounds like things that could work ultimately.
Yeah, no, definitely, because it's really what I like to say and get into is like, it's about creating an ecosystem.
Right.
Creating an environment and entertaining that environment and giving and really, really creating value in their life, a mm-hmm. purpose, and being, and that is the best way to, mm-hmm. stay in business, to just actually do something that freaking matters.
Mm-hmm. Well, man. Well, there wasn't much lineage to this talk because we got right into your post-college life, but I'm interested to hear about, we talk about college experience, what you foresaw or what you thought college would be, and then how it changed once you got out of college, what you hoped and expected it to be, and then
college specifically?
Yeah, just the whole college experience.
I thought it was bullshit.
Yeah, why is that?
Yeah, I was disappointed. Maybe it was my choices and what I studied. I studied marketing at Montclair State University. I'll forever cherish the relationships and the people I met at Montclair, mm-hmm. but when it comes to the actual education side, no, that's not fair. The entrepreneurship really did put me in the position where I am now because I met people through that program. But I just think I guess it's just my dissatisfaction with the whole concept of college. Because when I think of the exact tactics, the exact strategies, and the exact resources that I'm using for my success today, none of them came from college. It was all me, 2 a.m. on YouTube trying to teach myself. So it's kind of like I lucked out and I didn't put too much money into college. Like I could have went to a really expensive school and be in the shitter now, mm-hmm. but because I chose Montclair, it was like kind of the best bang for my buck. Mm-hmm. So I mean, investment wise, like yeah, it was a good investment. I don't have any debt now, so like mm-hmm. that's nice because but like to credit my success from college, I wouldn't credit my success totally from college.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of it.
Yeah, I think that the majority of my growth in college definitely came primarily from experiences outside of the classroom with organizations, extracurricular organizations, relationships I've made with people and advisors and things I learned from them, rather than actually having some type of like growing experience within the classroom. Like, I learned about the fundamentals of filmmaking for the most part, but a lot of my other education and the growth I got that was personal and professional came from the other stuff.
Yeah, and then that's also another thing that you bring up. I totally wish I did college differently in the fact that, so now my business, how I put food on the plate, is around selling a story. Mm-hmm. I wish I went to college and learned how to create a story. Because
what do you mean by selling a story in that?
So like, because that's what marketing is. It's really just a business has a story. They have a value proposition that they have for someone that has an issue. Mm-hmm. And marketing is simply just doing exactly what the Stoics did back in the day. It's just projecting a story out to people, mm-hmm. and entertaining them, and mm-hmm. them seeing value in what you're saying. So it's really just telling a story. So I wish I went to college to learn how to create a story, as in video production or writing or mm-hmm. something that I knew how to fundamentally create something that someone else can regurgitate and enjoy.
And you're an athlete at first too, right? You're a goalie.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Team. And that's probably the, as a young person, as a child, that was the most fundamental thing. The best thing I could have done in my life was lacrosse, probably, like specifically goalie,
yeah.
too, because it taught you so much about life.
Yeah, how so?
Because it's a lot different from other sports. For example, a goalie, not maybe just a goalie across board, but my experience is lacrosse specifically, is you can't be attack aggressively intense. If you get too tense, you know, you lose control and concentration. The position is all about concentration and controlling yourself and controlling your thoughts and focusing on something and reacting very quick. So you have to be calm, but you have to move quick and you have to be clear. So, and it also taught me, you know, getting hit repetitively with a 90-mile-per-hour ball, it taught me that, you know, pain is only temporary and you literally can just walk it off and just stop being a pussy and just, you know, and just, you know, it's not that bad. It's going to hurt for a little bit, but if you walk it off, you're going to forget about it and get after the next one. And, you know, just, you know, simple life lessons like that, like even just the simple fact of attacking the ball. A lot of people would think that you like wait for the ball. You attack the ball, and then that resides to anything in life. It's a lot better when you attack it and, you know, step towards something rather than wait for it.
So you talked about how that internship you had your senior year of college kind of changed you as a person.
Yeah.
Kind of instilled in you newer qualities that helped propel you to success in your endeavors after college. What type of qualities did you have that you kind of shed or kind of overcame, not negative qualities, but things that like negative, well, I guess negative qualities that you overcame from being in that type of professional experience, or how did you grow? What positive qualities did you accumulate?
It was all about being uncomfortable, putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. Like, for example, early, they were extremely hard on me because the whole system with Strikers, that they groom you into being the top in whatever you do within Striker after the internship program. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like you're training to get a job with Striker, mm-hmm. Like any internship should be, mm-hmm. you know, but they put me in to the point where they would put me in front of doctors and ask me to like explain stuff that they knew I didn't know how to explain to see how I handled myself.
Yeah.
Pretty much their method was throw you into the fire and let's see if you burn or not.
Wow.
And that intense day by day activity taught me how to have a conversation with a group full of people that are much older than you, much more skilled than you, and much more talented than you, but still entertain them enough to let you in and trust you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think definitely being uncomfortable every single day was the most growth I could have possibly done out of learning about, you know, bones and shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dude, that was something I talked about with Graziano, about how like this feeling of uncomfortable kind of...
We talk about that all the time. That is it, no, it's true, because you talk about it all the time too, and we always say, we're like, yeah, yo, Joe's so right about that. It's like, I hate being comfortable.
Right.
I hate being,
I mean, I love it, but I understand it what is, it's but doing.
It hinders you though. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, I always think like, you know, like, damn, I'm so grateful for how easy I have it. Like, why mm-hmm. me, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be comfortable.
There's this kind of saying that I learned from Jerry Seinfeld that I relate to that. And I kind of use it as a way to describe mine and Stav's kind of internal whatever, where it's like, Stav had obviously issues earlier in his life with just being a Muslim in this country and just mm-hmm. kind of overcoming people, you know, everything we talked about in that
being
podcast,
different, yeah,
being different, yeah. And so something that Jerry Seinfeld uses to describe the difference between, like, to describe him and his kids was, what he had to go through was, everything is bad, how do I make it good? And for his kids, it's, everything is good, why do I feel bad?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of relate that to me. Yeah. Stav, where Stav kind of faced such adversity and problems that propelled him to want to overcome that and make something better for himself, where I was like kind of nurtured in this like middle class suburban home where I was told that all my ideas were great and that, like, you know what I'm saying? This,
yeah,
this
like
sense
you'll
of comfortability.
Always be right. You'll always be number
yeah,
one.
So then why do I still feel like bad? Like, but yeah, not that like I, this dreadful, like kind of.
No, it's a similarity that we all have. It's just this constant dissatisfaction with where you are in life. And mm-hmm. like, you just, because there's so many possibilities, and because of the internet, you can see the possibilities. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why am I not doing everything?
And there's a thing where like kind of more affluent people have those types of struggles, where people who are constantly needing to figure out how to put food on the table, figuring out what the next step is, how do I get from A to B? Like, they don't have time to think of their own mental health, whereas someone who's like, all right, I got everything I need, why do I still feel, now I'm starting to think. So like, people who have that luxury of like good things materially don't have, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I told you, it's kind of like all of a sudden out, a certain point in evolution, like, we stopped, our purpose wasn't just eating and living anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, eating and living is really easy now.
Yeah.
So what do I do? What do I do with my time?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is just creating.
Mm-hmm.
Creating, whether it's memories, projects, something that's going to be here. And that just is something. And that's one, the biggest thing, if anyone takes anything away from, you know, anything I say, it would probably be like the concept of like stoicism. Stoicism is a huge thing I started reading about mm-hmm. and really getting into. And it's just like, it's a type of philosophy, and it's all around pretty much like acknowledging that shit is going to happen. Bad things are going to happen to you. And there's things that are out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
But when what you can control it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be a victim to your circumstances. Control your circumstances. Something bad happens, acknowledge it and move on, and find a way to make it not happen again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's interesting. It's kind of like
that's like kind of a form of meditation, to be honest.
It is meditation.
Me and Stav talk about that a lot. It's like not dreading what you can't control, being in the moment of now, understanding what your limitations and understanding what the negative things that happen to you are, but not to dread it.
Yeah.
And to kind of be present.
And it's like, stoicism gets a bad rap for being very dark and like, mm-hmm. I guess people use the word depressing
mm-hmm.
because like a bit, for example, like Marcus Aurelius, like he has this one line where it's about like, he tells himself every morning that no matter what you do at the end of the day, when you die, you will just be dirt. But there's something beautiful. It's so morbid, but there's something
beautiful.
There's something beautiful in the thought that
none
of this matters. So, like, let me just do everything I could do in my power today.
Yep.
And just expose myself and just try. At least try.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know? I talked about that my last podcast, how Jerry Seinfeld, when he wrote his show, to not feel stressed, he had a picture of the Hubble telescope in his office to remind him how he's just a speck.
Just speck.
And like how none of this in several years is going to matter. And it really is true. Some people, I've heard, some people can't resonate with that. Some people, that doesn't make, some, like when you say in 1,000 years, all this, That doesn't sometimes it brings a sad thought. Wear well on people. Yeah,
yeah, it brings a sad thought. Yeah. But I think it brings a sad thought to people that don't have something to live for, mm-hmm. or something to create, or some purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, because they realize like, oh shit, like my physical presence on this earth doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, what do I do then? Mm-hmm. You know, but if you just realize like, hey, why don't you go create, you know, a movie, or why don't you write a book, or why don't you create something that, you know, when the time does come, mm-hmm. that, you know, you can have a dramatic impact, you know, mm-hmm. 300 years down the road.
Yeah, man.
So post college, you kind of dove right into like some endeavors, professional endeavors. Mm-hmm. We usually talk about how you personally manage the routine change, but it seems like as if you were ready and you kind of were ready to leave college.
Yeah, I was ready for it. I was, you know, it got to the point where, you know, my junior, senior year, I was doing the whole college thing. Like, you know, you just kind of have this moment where you're sitting there like drinking a beer in, you know, a basement with a bunch of just drunk zombies around mm-hmm. you partying, and you just look at everyone, you just realize like, I don't know, man, it's gotta be more than this, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like this, there has to be more to life than just doing this every single weekend, every single night. So yeah, so I kind of just dove right into like, okay, this is what I want. I want to be successful. I want to create something that matters. And I really realistically told myself like, I want to be a marketing consultant. I didn't mm-hmm. know really what that meant, mm-hmm. but I was like, I want to be it. Cause like Tim Ferriss, for example, like I was really into Tim Ferriss at the time, like reading his books and podcasts and blogs and whatnot. And I was like, I want to do what he does. I want to like advise people and help people build great things because I'm good at marketing and like kind of like taking a step back and seeing how like people work mm-hmm. And do things. And I was like, I know that's my specialty and like kind of like what I'm good at. So why not just do that? But like go big or go home. That's always been like my thought is like, if I'm going to do something, I want skin in the game. I want huge risk because that's a big payout. So that's kind of been my approach so far.
But how have you handled personally, like living at home, the routine change from college and from like,
yeah, I mean,
such an environment.
Yeah,
change.
Going from an environment of interacting with people your age every single day to living in your mother's basement is not the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah,
and it's like the ultimate diss on a man saying like, yeah. Oh, you live in your mom's basement, like you know, like. It's not a comfortable feeling. So I think that change and that discomfort mm-hmm. with myself of not being, you know, in my eyes successful because I'm too hard. I'm extremely hard on myself, you know. Mm-hmm. So just being dissatisfied with my current state has totally created my work ethic. Mm-hmm. So if anything, it is sad and it is like kind of like depressing to think about the fact that like, you know, you're not in college anymore and you're not around all these people and you don't see a lot of people every day. And like, you know, it's like, now what? The real world, mm-hmm. you know, now what do I do? But then you realize like, you know, I can create this world. Mm-hmm. And then you start doing it and it's like, oh my God, like you can literally create whatever you want. And you know,
it's up to you.
It's up to you. It's totally up to you. It's totally up to you. Like if you want it bad enough, like it's not easy. It's going to require you to, you know, pretty much like for the past 8 months, I really haven't done much but work.
Right.
You know, so it's crazy sacrifices. Mm-hmm. But now, like, you know, I put myself in a position to live, you know, how I want, mm-hmm. which is nice. And it's always a work in progress. Like, I could wake up tomorrow and it could all fall and crash on top of me. But because I have the mentality that, like, it doesn't matter. I'm just like, I'm not talented. I'm obsessed. Mm-hmm. It's like, it doesn't matter what happens. Like, I'm still just going to do it.
Yeah, man.
You know?
So, I want to end. We usually end with hopes for the future, personal, professional. Okay. But so I want to end with that first. But then I'm interested in your opinion on a story I heard in the news today, kind of around millennials. But first, what hopes for the future? With I guess for the business, for you personally, professionally, short term, long term.
Yeah. So business, Rod's acquisition. Build up this business enough to where we're acquired by a big time firm. Mm-hmm. You know, that's everyone's big, you know, sellout dream. And then professionally move to a position of angel investment, VC, you know, big time, try and go for IPOs and whatnot. And, you know, that's the real way to become, you know, multimillionaire, billionaire in that sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm professionally, that's where I want to go. But I've always wanted to get into creating a movie. Writing a screenplay.
Wow.
You know, like that's my secret thing, man. Like I write a lot. I do a lot of writing and I want to, because business is great and I love business and I'm very grateful for what it's done for me thus far. Mm-hmm. But there's this itch around mm-hmm. creating something that I got to get after and I want to get into it. Like I just, I find it boring doing one thing. I got to do multiple things just because I got crazy ADD. Like, I just have to do multiple things. So, I mean, that's
what... Did my mom recognize that in you?
Yeah. Your mom is the one that was like, this kid's got shit going on. He can't pay attention. He's doing 20 things at one time.
She's really good at that for some reason.
But, like, that's what the school systems need more. People that recognize something. Because what happened was I recognized that, and instead of saying, like, damn, why can't I sit down and pay attention for this long? It's okay, you just like doing a lot of things at one time, so let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of like embracing it and using it mm-hmm. to your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
have you ever heard the story, the ADD story about this guy? I forget his name, but he gave a TED talk about education and about how education kind of stifles, I think is the correct word, creativity.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And because. Oh, that's your phone vibrating. Yeah, it's fine. It's because the education system is predicated on how mistakes are the worst thing. And
everyone's scared to ask questions.
Yeah. And that's the killer of fear of making a mistake is a killer of creativity. And there was this girl who was like fidgety in class, and she wouldn't sit still. And, The teacher told her to bring her to the doctor. So the mom brought her to the doctor, and the doctor found nothing wrong with her. And they left the room, and they put on music, and the girl just started like moving to the music. And the doctor was like, "Your daughter isn't sick; she's a dancer." So I guess the moral of the story is now someone would have told her she had ADD, right?
Yeah,
and given her a pill and told her to calm down, but that girl went on to create one of the most successful ballerina companies in all of history. She choreographed Cats, and she's given pleasure to millions of people. But like in the past, people would have told her, and it's crazy.
You know? It's crazy, but you know, it's really sad because you know what's happening is like there's people that have another purpose besides of what school thinks our purpose is, because to them we're just a number. You know, they get more funding if they just produce better results. Yeah. So it's kind
your
of
cousin
like,
Chris Girardi talked about the socialization of school.
That. I love that podcast, you and Chris. I learned more about Chris that podcast than I've ever known. Which is cool about podcasts.
Yeah,
you know?
Man,
like, you really get to know people. But anyway, yeah, back to like, you know, the system sucks. It's like, it's just like, it's just stifled. Because you know what? There's a kid right now that's our age that's coming out of college and starting to get a job. And like, I don't know, fucking whatever. I don't want to bash whatever job. But like, and he's realizing like, that's not what he wants to do with his life.
Yeah.
He wishes that he was back in middle school, you know, pursuing that, whatever that wacky thing was that he was into. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he started taking pills and focusing and I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So personal future, what are you
personal feet as in I'm outside of
work
I guess you're
prioritizing professionalism over
once you start owning a business there's no difference but no that's a good point but that's exactly it. I'd like to differentiate my personal life and besides like you know what I was saying like creating like you know, movies or screenplays or whatever and get into writing I want to travel a ton. I want to see the world, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I've spent my entire life. I went to school at Pequannock. I was born in Chillen. Went to school in Pequannock.
Yeah.
Went to school at Montclair State University. Like, I practically barely left Morris County. Went into, you know, Essex and Bergen a little bit. But I want to see what the hell's out there.
Yeah, man.
I want to see what's out there. I want to meet people who are out there. And I just want to, you know, I want to see it for myself.
Yeah, man. All right. That's awesome. Well, so I want to end with this. So in the news today, I wonder what Ryan's opinion on this was. Hugh Hefner's son, I forget his name, who's a millennial, spoke out against millennials supporting Donald Trump, saying that there's a lot of people within our generation who support him because of our dissatisfaction with the normal agenda.
With the puppet type of like you see what's
the normal establishment. That's
okay.
What I was like.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering what your opinion.
No, I totally had a feeling you were going to bring that up, like that thought concept. Because I totally believe that. I totally believe that people are kind of millennial wise. I mean, that's why I think Sanders has a good, you know, millennial track as well. Because we want to join something different. We realize that this system isn't working. You know, the concept of one personing being a public figure is just an archaic thought now. Like the access to information and I can't believe out of everyone in the country, we can't find one person that is better than what we currently have representing us.
Yeah.
It's just like...
The reason I brought that up is because, yeah, maybe there are some millennials out there who are attracted to Donald Trump's rebellious nature, but I also think that millennials have an ability to recognize authenticity and to recognize a genuine person. Okay. So I think that may be... I don't know. I hope that may be. What are your thoughts on Trump? And what are your thoughts on...
That's an interesting thought, though, that we've on our hierarchy of values, we value authenticity over even correctness and what is proper.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. And that's interesting that you brought that up. I'd agree with that, that our values are over making sound and making a difference rather than being correct.
So you're saying you're attracted to Trump because you think that rather than him being saying what's right, you think that he's just...
Oh, no, I'm not saying I'm attracted to him. I'm just saying I see why people are attracted to him.
Well, I'm saying authenticity, like, not necessarily from a standpoint. Authenticity meaning, is he a genuine person? Does he believe what he's saying? Or does he really believe what he's saying? Or is he just pandering?
No, he's pandering in his own form.
Where I think Bernie really believes everything he's saying. Oh, yeah. I think he's a genuine, honest person.
Yeah, no, I'd totally be into Bernie if he just had a different tax policy.
But at the same time, I don't know anything about politics. So, like, I'm attracted to someone. This is the way I judge a presidential candidate. Who seems the least sociopathic?
That's
Bernie.
That's why, I mean, the only thing is... I do my due diligence as best I can.
Because
I don't know. I hear all the time people say, like, you know, the fact that Americans have this right and, you know, mm-hmm. this much control over something, like, they should, you know, go vote, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't know who I'm voting for.
Neither honestly. Do I.
Like, part of me is like, you know what? Like, Hillary is a safe bet. Like, Bernie may totally screw up with the taxes, like, screw up, like, how the system is and make it possibly even worse, and Trump may, like, send us all to hell, but Hillary will just do whatever's going on right now for another 4 years. So I'm kind of like, all right, let's just do Hillary and we'll try again next 4 years. We'll try again next one, you know, like, let's see who we get for the next one. Let's start preparing someone. Get someone ready, you know.
All right, well, thanks for doing this. We're at an hour and a minute.
Oh, wow. That flies by, man.
Yeah, right?
That was so much fun.
Thanks.
I had a good time.
I appreciate you doing this. I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Oh, thanks, man.
And yeah, thanks for coming.
And no worries. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you for all listening to that. Thank you to Ryan. Thank you. Yeah, got at the end there. We kind of weren't on the same page, but hopefully we got on the same page with Trump. If, by the way, type into Google Louis C.K. Donald Trump, his most recent emails to fans on his email list, which I'm a part of. He gave this long explanation and plea to people, not an explanation, a plea to people not to vote for Trump. And why he thinks you shouldn't. And it was perfect. So if you want to take the time to read that, it was amazing. But anyway, thank you all for listening. Oh, and I want to give a shout out. There's a podcast called Flick Picks with Phil and Tom. I know Tom Palumbo. He's a good friend of mine. He went to QU. I would say he knows a lot about movies. I don't usually toot other people's movie horns because out of jealousy. But he knows, if not just as much as me, he knows more than me, probably. And that podcast is fantastic. As a movie lover, I thoroughly enjoy it. He gave a plug on his podcast for my podcast, so I wanted to return the favor. I listened to the first few episodes. Their episode about the Oscars was very articulate and very insightful. So if you enjoy movies, or you just enjoy, you know, two guys who are fun to listen to, take a listen to that. Flick Picks with Phil and Tom. But thank you to everyone who's listened to this podcast. I really appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, I will see you later. I won't see you, probably, most of you. But until then, have a good one.